Let me tell you a story, podcast number 140.
It was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Call me Ishmael.
It was the age of wisdom.
Some years ago, never mind.
It is a truth universally acknowledged.
You don't know about me without you.
Welcome to Let Me Tell You a Story with your hosts, Steve and Becky Lyles. Settle back into your seat, step onto your favorite fitness machine, or lace up your walking shoes, and enjoy stories from a variety of genres and authors.
Hi, this is Steve.
Hi, this is Becky. Welcome to Let Me Tell You a Story. We often invite authors to talk with us on this podcast, but today we're speaking with one of the many people authors value the most, readers. H.C. Newton is not only an avid, and I mean avid, reader, he hosts a website that's all about books and their authors called The Irresponsible Reader. Welcome, H.C.
Thanks for having me.
I love the name, The Irresponsible Reader. How'd you come up with that?
There is, I think it's still present tense, a webcomic about librarians. And there was one strip about them encouraging a young child to read whatever they wanted, to read irresponsibly. They even sold a t-shirt like that for a while. And I just kind of liked that idea. Mm-hmm. And then a number of years later, I was looking for a name for my blog, and that's what came to mind.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So before we get into that too much, tell us more about yourself. You live in the Boise area.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get here?
I was born in North Idaho. My parents moved around a lot when I was a child through various parts of the state. Landed in Payette in early 80s and just have stayed in this area since then, with a brief sojourn to Moscow for college, but mm-hmm. essentially Napa, Boise area.
So you're an Idahoan.
I am.
Born and bred.
Yes.
How do they say that?
Well, this gets pretty personal here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you married, kids, grandkids, great-grandkids?
Yeah, married for 26 years, four kids, wow. One great daughter-in-law, and a seven-week-old grandson
Who
is the greatest thing ever.
Of course.
Yeah.
The cutest in the world.
Yes, absolutely.
I was going to ask if they're all readers, but maybe not the grandson.
No, but he's got quite the collection of books already.
Nice.
The kids, not the biggest readers, honestly. I think I might have pushed it a bit too hard, you know, insisted a bit and took away some of the fun of reading. There's a lot of stuff I read now about how to grow a reader and things like that. And I look at the don't do this. I'm like, oh, well, that's what I did. But they all have a respect for books. They, you know, if there's something that interests them, they will read it. They probably read about as much as a typical American, which is like two books a year. So
they'll probably come back to it too.
That's my hope.
Over time.
That's my hope. Yeah.
So this is an off-the-cuff question. Have you been involved in any reading programs in schools? Or
me, myself?
Yeah, like to tutor kids
or
anything like that?
No. That would probably be a good thing for me to look into as a way of... now that I'm an empty nester, not been that long, I do have a little bit more time, and that's the kind of thing I should probably look into. Thanks.
I did that in a school in Wyoming,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, that was great, and I should probably think about that also. You have an excellent website.
Oh, thanks.
irresponsiblereader.com, as well as other social media sites. What is your purpose with those sites?
That's a good question. The purpose of the blog, very honestly, is a number of years ago, I realized that I was just tearing through books and I wasn't thinking about them. I wasn't appreciating them. I was just going through them like tissue paper. And you know, occasionally I would find myself checking out a book from the library I'd read 3 months earlier without realizing it. I'm like, wait a second. I know series can be repetitive, but hold on. So that's when Goodreads was just starting. And so this is quite a few years ago. So I got the Goodreads account going. And I was like, I'll just post at least a paragraph or two about everything I write as a way to force myself. But I had like one or two followers on Goodreads. No one noticed if I didn't post anything for 6 months. So it wasn't great. So I figured if I had my own site and like three or four people followed me, which is about all I figured would happen, someone would notice if I stopped posting. So it was really just a way for me to be accountable to myself and actually think about what I was taking in. And then it's grown a little bit. I've got some independent authors and some not so independent authors who will come by and submit a book for me. So they get a little bit of publicity, they get some interaction with a reader. And then the social media is really to promote the site and occasionally to interact with other readers, other book bloggers, writers, and whatnot. But primarily my social media, aside from being a great way to waste time, is for me to promote the site.
Great.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the beginning. Where did your love for reading begin?
I think my love for reading began with my mother, who read to me a lot as a child. And I, as I am told, I was a fairly early reader because of that. Some of it was not really reading. It was just memorizing the book that she, you know, some of the books that she read over and over again. But once I got to kindergarten and first grade and second grade and everything like that, I was, even then, just kind of a voracious reader. I remember there was a read-a-thon for March of Dimes or something like that in, I want to say it was my second grade year. You go around all the neighborhood and you know, get pledges, you know, 5 cents or 10 cents per book. Gentleman across the street thought he said he'd donate a dollar. He didn't realize it was a dollar a book. My parents called him and said, you don't want to do that. He's like, oh, no, that's what I told the kid I would do, so I'll do it. And I can't remember how long of time it was or anything like that. He had to pay like 110 bucks.
Oh.
That was just a thing I did. I didn't even think about it. I've told this story a handful of times. So readers of my blog, sorry, you have to hear it. Summer after second grade, my parents and I, we were moving from East Idaho to Payette, and we took a detour to California while the movers were taking care of the furniture. We went down, you know, Disneyland and all that stuff, and we're day two, I think, of the car drive, and I was bored. I didn't know what to think, what was going to happen on the trip. I didn't think about what I was going to need to do. I don't think my parents had thought too much about that. And I got bored and I got demanding and I was probably pretty annoying because they stopped and bought me two books at the next town. And I read those and read those and read those over the next 2 weeks. And it was at that point in time that it clicked with me, and it definitely clicked with my parents that, yeah, this kid needs to have a book all the time. So we move into our home. I think probably almost instantly, my mother took me down, got me a library card, and you know, rest is history. And yeah, I go everywhere with a book. If I'm gonna be somewhere for more than 5 minutes, at the very least, I've got my Kindle app on my phone, so I'll be okay.
Do you have an average, like, do you read 10 or 5 or books per week, or do you?
20 a month, plus or minus. Like, for example, the book I started yesterday is 1,000 pages, so I'm probably not going to finish that one this week. There are other weeks where I will knock off 5 or 6 print books, plus 1 or 2 audiobooks. I listen to that while I'm working, so.
Do you have any favorite books from childhood?
Yes. The Encyclopedia Brown series. Mm. One of those was one of the books that I bought on that trip, and that created a monster because I read a lot of crime fiction to this day. The Three Investigators. Beverly Cleary, of course, because I think that's a law. know, Mouse and the Motorcycle, that series, Judy Blume's Tales of Fourth Grade Nothing, Super Fudge, that kind of thing. Julie Edwards, also known as Julie Andrews, if you prefer her stage persona. She wrote a children's book called The Last of the Really Great Wang Doodles, which, yeah, it's just one of those that got into my bones. The Phantom Toll Booth, of course. Lloyd Alexander's Chronicles of Prydain. It's a fantasy series. C.S. Lewis and the Chronicles of Narnia made me a C.S. Lewis fan. Lloyd Alexander made me a fantasy fan. The Westing Game by Ellen Raskin. I have to mention that. That's one of the few that I can still appreciate. Phantom Tollbooth as well, but some of the other ones are kind of like, okay, think about 10-year-old me when I read it, or when I read those to my kids, because I read all of those that I just mentioned to my kids. You know, that was, I was able to connect to it that way. But the Westing Game, it's like a song. I can sing along with it as I'm reading, and I don't care. So yeah, those would be some of the big ones from childhood that I remember.
Just a few.
Yeah, just a few.
Do you know your words per minute?
No.
Just fast and faster, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I've never taken a speed reading course. And I do know, I remember in grade school, there were people who would read faster. I'm like, okay, great. I read a lot, so it doesn't matter how fast I read. But no, I am at the faster end of the spectrum, I think, without employing any of the strategies that you're supposed to for that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, that's the main thing, is getting it done, not how fast.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have a speedometer on you.
No.
Well, and retaining it.
Yeah. Right. You know?
Yeah, that you can even say those names off that fast. You know, I'd still be... Yeah.
Yeah. It does help that, what, I guess 2 weeks ago now was the 10th anniversary of my blog, so I was revisiting some of these things. So I did kind of have a refresher course. So a little bit of cheating.
We won't call it that.
Okay, thanks.
Reviewing, yes. What kind of access to books did you have as a kid? Was it the public library, or did you steal from your friends' libraries?
Primarily the public library. A little bit from the various school libraries, although... to sound like a snob, I really didn't like their selections.
That's classic.
But during the, especially like say during the summer, most of my childhood, public library had a 3-book maximum. That's all I could take out. So I would visit the library at least 3 times in a week. Yeah. I could walk. It was the 80s. Parents did crazy things like letting their children outside. I never did, but. but yeah, so I would walk down to the library, get 3 books, and there was a couple of summers where I would do it daily. I would come home from the library, read a book, start one as I went to sleep, finish one in the morning, read another one, and then go to the library and repeat the whole thing again. So yeah, that was, and then you know, my parents would occasionally buy me a book or something like that, and I had an aunt and a grandmother that were really good. They would take me to a bookstore on my birthday or around my birthday and like pick something, whatever you want. So there was a lot of support in the family for that kind of thing. And on the whole, there was not a whole lot of restrictions on what I would read. You know, if I was interested in it, you know, my mother in particular would keep an eye out for what I was reading, and she would kind of follow along. And, you know, if there was a title she wasn't so sure that I was ready for, she would read it alongside or after me so we could talk about it. At a certain point, she gave up because she just didn't have that much time. But at the same time, you know, so while I did have kind of a free hand, also the public librarians knew who I was. And so there were some books I wanted to read, but I just couldn't bring it up to them and check it out. So, you know, while I was, you know, like 10, 15 pages at a time during a library trip, I would kind of work through some of those things. But I couldn't bring myself to check it out.
Well, you must have been easy to shop for.
I maintain to this day that when people say that I'm hard to find something for, like, there are bookstores that you can at least get a certificate to. And, you know, but no, I am frequently told I am. I'm like, no, I'm not.
a gazillion books.
Yes.
My memory of childhood in the local library was, I think we called it Carnegie, but it's Carnegie, right?
Yeah.
Was, I don't know, 8 blocks from our house.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summertime, we'd walk barefoot. And I remember the feel after walking barefoot on the city streets, walking onto the marble floors that were cold and cool.
That would be nice.
So it's a good memory. And the children's section was downstairs. And there were those books about, man, different, it was from the viewpoint of different animals, a mole, a raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the names, but those were downstairs. But eventually I graduated to Nancy Drew.
Sure.
And Tom Swift. And then maybe some others I shouldn't have graduated to. You know? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
First book I can remember reading, I don't know how old I was, but I think it was Charlie Cockatoo Visits the Insect World.
Okay. All right. That sounds like it could be kind of a messy if cockatoo is getting into the insect world. Hopefully they've eaten before they do that.
Yeah. Mm. And I have no idea why I would remember that.
It's just a great title. It sticks with you.
It did.
So, HC, your website has lists of books you read last month, books you're currently reading, and books you hope to read soon. The number of books and variety is amazing, from time travel fiction to nonfiction, masculinity and femininity, to church history and urban fantasy, and more. Do you have a method to your reading, like so many of this genre and so many of that genre?
No, no. That's part of where the irresponsible comes in. It's just whatever catches my mind. Alan Jacobs, in his book, Reading for Pleasure in an Age of Distraction, 98% sure of that title, talks about reading with whimsy, like picking something based on your mood, based on what you want to do. I don't pick by genre or anything like that. Outside of that, I'll pick up a review copy. And so then, okay, well, I need to review it by X date. I don't want to do a whole bunch of urban fantasy in a row, because at a certain point you get a little burned out, so I'll kind of structure it around that kind of thing. But when I'm picking decide I'm going to read a book, I really don't think about that kind of stuff. It's only when I'm like, oh, right, here's what I have to read over the next week or so. That's the only time I'll think about that kind of thing. Hmm. If I'm reading a detective novel, I don't want three dark, gritty detective novels in a row. I'll take one, and then I'll take a cozy mystery, or you know, something more cerebral or light, and then I can do another gritty. You know, but three gritty noirs in a row, and it affects your mood. also, then by the third one, I might be a little bit burned out, and I don't want to be unfair to number three.
If you keep all these books, then do you not need paint on your walls? It's just solid bookshelves.
Yes. I do get a lot still from the library, and then a growing number of ebooks. And as my eyes get older and the ebook, you can change size. So that's becoming something I go more about. But yes, no, there is one room in my house that wall to wall, floor to ceiling is, or as close to that, books, and it's growing. It will very likely take over another room soon. But yeah, no, that is a frequent topic of discussion. I'm like, well, where are you going to put these things? And I don't have a good answer for that.
I was just going to ask what your wife is thinking. Does she have a hobby that takes up shelf space, or
she does do like some modelings and working with miniatures and stuff like that, and so she does add some decorations to some of the shelves, and so that helps a little bit. And she reads a decent amount herself, not anywhere near my out of control habit, but so there are some shelves that are her stuff. I don't get all the blame, but she's also more apt to sell or donate or give away a book than I really am. Mm-hmm. Some of those books I listed off from childhood, I still have those copies. And you can forget about me getting rid of them. My children can do that when I'm gone. That's on them to take care of. But me, no.
And everybody knows which ones to keep their hands off of.
Yes. Yeah.
They're under lock and key in the vault.
No. I've learned from Toy Story 2. You don't lock that kind of stuff away. You got to keep it accessible. Like the Westin game. I have, 3 copies of that. I just stumbled on a nice-looking hardcover reprint a few years ago, and that's kind of cool, so I grabbed that. And then last year, I'm browsing at Rediscovered, and there was a new reissue with a nice little paperback. I'm like, I like that one, too. So I don't do a whole lot of that, because if I do that, I can't buy a new book. So,
right. So you have... Your budget says, utilities, car insurance, books.
Yes. Occasionally my wife/bookkeeper will tell me that, All right, that's it for now. But yeah, there are times a couple of months ago, the Nampa Library had a local author fair. And I spent way too much money at that thing. And I read a couple of the books. I'll be getting to the rest of them in the next month or two. But yeah, that was a big stack that I came home with. Sorry.
You see the cartoons where Blondie goes and comes back with packages so high he can't
exactly.
See it. Says, mm-hmm. Look at all the money I saved.
Yes, so. Exactly. That's me. Yeah.
Do you read more than one book at a time, or do you read one through and then start the next?
That... I primarily read one print and one audio at a time, not simultaneously. But I will occasionally, if a book is a little on the slower side or collections of short stories, I get a little burnt out, especially if it's by one author, if I read too many at once. So then I will kind of bounce back and forth between things. But by and large, I prefer to just dive into one and write it out. But yeah, there are things like poetry collections, short story collections. I recently read a collection of essays by a journalist on the state of American journalism, essentially. And those I wanted to stop and think about, and I didn't want to jump onto the next one. So I'd put it down, work on a novel for a little bit, and then come back the next day for another bite of that. But yeah, by and large, I prefer... Like I said, to just dive in and keep my focus on one. I have some blogger friends who will be reading 10 books at a time. How do you do that? I mean, you do that with television shows. You don't just watch one TV show at a time. But for me, with books, it doesn't work wonderfully that way.
So in all those genres that I listed, and there are many more, do you have a favorite?
Crime. Crime detective. Crime. Yeah. Yeah, that's about a third of what I read. And everything else kind of shakes out after that.
I can tell you had to really think about that for
me. Yes. Crime. Yep.
On your sites, you're a good writer. Have you thought of writing your own book?
That has been the plan off and on. You know, when you're a bookish kid, you think about writing a book. And so I did a lot of writing in grade school and in junior high and high school. I actually had a double major in college, psychology and creative writing. I stopped short. I didn't want to stick around for another semester. I had 4 credits to go for the creative writing degree. So I don't actually have that, but I did almost all the writing classes I needed to. I needed one more credit of that, but the rest of it was like Shakespeare. I'm not sticking around one semester to take a Shakespeare course and one writing course. I've regretted that since. But yeah, anyway, I have dabbled with short stories and work working on novels, you know, National Novel Writing Month. I've competed in that a handful of times. All of my kids have competed in that too, the grade school version. A couple of my kids finished two or three times. I finished three or four times. One of them, I think if I took the time, I could rework it. I could salvage it. The other two either take way too much work or, well, actually, no, they both just take too much work and I don't want to do it. I don't know that I have the discipline or the drive right now. Perhaps later I will find it. But now I just don't have, I can't stop everything to put in the work.
But that was good practice.
Yes.
To do.
Yes.
It's not wasted.
No, I hope not. But for now, the blogging is enough for me to feel like I'm actually writing. And I always, one of my creative writing professors, the one who did the best job of like mentoring and guiding and stuff like that, said that most of my stories were actually arguments in disguise. Huh. So that's cut out the disguise, and that's just write what I'm thinking.
It's like in an essay?
Yeah. I mean, I never really saw that, but that was what he said, that, you know, he saw it behind almost all of my stuff. Mm-hmm. At that time, there were a lot of more Christian apologetic kind of messages, I think. That, at least that's what he was picking up. Hmm. Maybe, I don't know. So that there's a little voice in the back of my head when I dabble with writing. It's like fiction. It's like, is this actually a story or is this something else? And so at least when I'm blogging, there's no story. I'm not pretending. I'm just saying what I think. Okay. And trying to convince someone to give a book a read or a pass or something like that.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting input from a professor.
Yeah.
But it's okay to have a book with a purpose.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
So many of them do.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And like many readers, we sometimes find those purposes that don't exist and miss those that do. And it's definitely not... But for me, I always just wanted to tell a story. I didn't want to be making an argument. And so, and I don't know, but that is one of the little voices in the back of my head when I dabble with fiction. I was like, am I doing that? I hear his voice in the back of my head to this day. I'm like, okay, let's make sure that this is actually a story first.
Well, we could argue about that if you want.
Exactly.
I think as long as it comes out natural.
Yeah.
I've tried to do in my books, mm-hmm. and talk about hard subjects. I try not to preach about it, but
right,
and that's the fun of fiction. You can show the horror of human trafficking or the horror of being caught in a religious cult, mm-hmm. Or the pain of abortion without preaching. You know, so that's
right. Yes, yeah,
it's. You can do it.
Yeah. Actually, while you're talking, I just remembered a few years ago, I took a summer workshop at the cabin. And day one, the instructor, leader, whatever he was, went on a diatribe about genre fiction. And he didn't want to see any, he didn't like genre fiction, he didn't like young adult stuff or anything like that. And I'm like, okay. And so I gave him nothing but genre fiction. That was my argument. There it was. I'm going to take your assignment. I'm going to complete it as you asked for, but I'm going to do it on a bioengineered planet. So there.
I heard a podcast lately where they were interviewing somebody who had MFA in creative writing. Mm-hmm. And they did not teach, I've heard of this twice, they did not teach one class on creative writing.
Really?
It was all about, I don't know what it was all about. Very literary. Mm-hmm. But both authors who are now in genre fiction said they had to learn that on their own.
Right, yeah. But,
And wondered why they wasted 5 years.
Exactly.
And all that
getting,
money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting the degree. I have one last question, though we could come up with more. I appreciate that you support authors and feature them and their books on your website and your blog. That's how we met.
Right.
Someone suggested that you interview me, which was a great experience. But I have a feeling you don't love every book you lay your eyes on. For all the authors listening, please tell us what you like to see in books and what makes you put a book down. And do you have any pet peeves?
Oh, wow. What makes me put a book down? Almost nothing. I maybe once or twice a year stop reading a book. Because I always want to give the author a chance to convince me. It rarely happens, but every now and then I'll be in the closing chapters and like, oh, that's what you were going for. Okay, you know what? I'm in. Or you at least didn't waste my time. And if an author actually, an author or a publisher or an agent or whatever has actually personally reached out to me, I will absolutely finish that. They may not want me to at a certain point, but I do. And then I do write about it. All publicity is good publicity in some sense. A review is a review. It helps out on the search engines and whatnot. So I'm told. I don't know. Pet peeves. British or other nationality writers writing an American character who uses terms that Americans don't. And I'm sure we do the same thing. But I call it revenge for Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins. And, you know, there are authors that I really do like, but when they decide to write an American character, it's like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't use a sat-nav. We use a GPS. Stop saying Jim McCoy typed this into his sat-nav. No, he didn't, because he grew up in Denver. He doesn't know what a sat-nav is. I'm not big on love triangles. I'm not saying that there aren't good ones, but I really don't like them. Chosen one, you know, stories in fantasy. I say I don't like them, but I can't think of one I don't like.
There's quite a few of those.
Yeah, zombies. I'm not a zombie guy. Although about once a year, someone will trick me or get me to read a zombie book that I actually do like, but I typically avoid those. Things like that. It's everything that I've ever said, I don't want to read this. As soon as I put that on paper or on a screen, I can think of five examples of, no, actually, that's actually can be done pretty well. Sparkly vampires, I'm not that into. I prefer.
Sparkly?
Yeah, sparkly, like, you know, Twilight vampires. I prefer a vampire that is a little scary. although Fred, the vampire accountant, he doesn't sparkle, but he's really friendly and he's helpful. So he doesn't have to, you don't have to be terrifying, but he could be if you wanted to be.
I haven't heard of Fred the Vampire. It's just, that's a funny
Yeah, name. It is. It is. And it's one of those titles you pick up because Fred the Vampire Accountant. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll give that a try. I think it's, what, 8 books in on the series now? And they're fun. Funny. Did I think I answered 2/3 of the question, but I don't remember the other third.
I think you...
Okay, cool.
You answered them all.
All right, that's it.
So we're getting to the end. Is there a question that you think we should ask you?
I can't imagine. So obviously not everyone in the world needs to be a reader. You know, not everyone in the world needs to be anything. But I know for myself and for friends and acquaintances, both locally and throughout the world, books can be a respite from the world. They can be a help for loneliness. They can be a help for stress. They can, and people who think because they had a bad experience in school with a teacher who forced them to read Lord of the Flies or something that don't want to read again. Mm-hmm. Just try something that seems interesting to you. Give it a shot. I think of a friend of mine who I used to work with, and he saw me reading all the time, and he's like, what's a book I might like? And, I gave him a few suggestions and then a few more and a few more. And now he is reading constantly. And it has really proven as like a refuge from the world for him. He has a job that can be frequently depressing and frequently heartbreaking. And he has talked to me about how being able to open up a book, to go into a world where justice prevails. He, too, is a big crime fiction reader. Where justice frequently prevails, or at least people care about it, where rights get wronged or something silly happens and people can just enjoy it. That kind of thing at the end of a long day has been a refuge for him. It's a refuge for me and a lot of people I know. So I guess I can't imagine there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that don't read. But if you're out there, try something. Try one of Becky's books, for example, or at least buy them. but just try something that seems interesting. Don't worry about labels. Don't worry if it's YA or middle grade or supernatural or whatever. If it seems interesting to you, give it a shot. And, if you like it, keep going. And if you want suggestions, irresponsiblereader.com.
So that brings me to movies.
Yes.
Not just adaptations, but in general. Would you rather read a book than watch a movie? Or just what do you think about movies?
On the whole, yes, I'd rather read a book. But I love films. I think there are some stories that can't be told as effectively in print that need to be visual. And adaptations, probably best to avoid that. But film as a whole, I love. I can geek out about those. I can talk with almost as much passion about movies as I can books. Not quite as in-depth necessarily because I haven't watched as many as I used to. But no. Storytelling in various fashions, audio, video, film. I can't follow video games. My kids try to show me that that's a story. And I believe it. And it is. There are narrative things and narrative aspects to it I can appreciate. But I don't have the brain capacity to follow it. I don't have the
patience.
I don't have the patience. I definitely don't have the hand-eye coordination to get me from story point A to story point B. So yeah, any kind of narrative, I'm all for whatever form.
So Prince, you love just a good mine. Story.
Yes, yes. Hey, and there's the segue into your catchphrase.
Yes. But you have a question.
You work and you read and you have a family. Did you have other hobbies in your spare time? Do you like to fish or skydive or what do you like to do?
No. I'm really an indoor cat. My kids will love that because I don't compare myself to feline ever. Movies, TV, a little bit. Books, writing. My dogs, are those a hobby? but I don't really know. No. Bilbo has the right kind of lifestyle for me before Gandalf shows up and ruins everything. Just stay at home, have good food, and read.
Yeah. That is the cat's life.
Yes.
That is, yeah.
Food and somewhere to curl up.
Yeah.
HC, thanks so much for coming.
You bet.
This has been a lot of fun.
Oh, good, good. And
those readers in our audience who, now they won't know if they should try to watch this. It's not on YouTube, or if they should try to find it in a book where it's not. It's on this podcast. Why don't you tell our listeners and us about your sites and where they can see what books you are and have and will read.
Okay.
And your comments. Get your comments.
And how to connect with you.
Yeah.
Irresponsiblereader.com is the easiest thing. Twitter at HC Newton. Facebook, you can do a search for the Irresponsible Reader Facebook page. There is a almost not used at all Instagram, but I just claimed it just so it would be there.
It's like mine.
There is the best way to get a hold of me is there's some comment sections or links on the main page of the blog on I think it's links something like tell me something or read my book if you're trying to promote a book. Anyway, yeah, or just post something in the comment on any one of the posts, and I will see it. I love to interact. I'm sometimes slow, but I love to interact with readers.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Squeak. Thank you, HC, and I also want to thank our listeners. Remember, you too have a story. Be sure to live it to the fullest.
I want to hear that squeak again.
Thank you for listening to Let Me Tell You a Story. Please email your comments, suggestions, and submissions to story@beckylyles.com. That's all for now. Tune in next time to enjoy a fresh assortment of stories on Let Me Tell You a Story.